Okay, public art in Chicago, in Logan Square. I'm with my local tour guide, and my local tour guide is going to explain to me the cover art. What am I looking at, sure. Jeremy?
So we are standing right in the middle of the cross streets of Logan Square. As you can see, there's lots of traffic and foot traffic and cars coming from every direction. So we are standing in prime advertising territory with lots of visibility, right? So this is also just above the train line here.
We're looking at the side of a building, folks, yeah. I have to tell you, right?
It's a massive building about maybe 40 to 50 feet up into the air. It's completely painted black. And what you'll see here is there are two key areas that would normally hold advertisements.
Two big rectangular things. They look identical size. Yes. I don't know if that's the truth. Yep. But as you say, it's pure advertising space.
Yes. If I were scouting advertising space and I was working for Starbucks or
but
McDonald's,
it looks like as
area.
If they're getting it ready to put up the next
exactly.
advert, right?
So that's where the art comes in, right? So this was originally purchased or was open for bidding for advertisers.
Right.
And a local artist, Logan Square is home to many, many artists in the city, obviously. He started a campaign to raise enough funds to outbid corporations for this advertising space because they wanted to keep it free of advertising and corporate advertising. And so, as part of the art project, they all combined their funds, they won the bid, and they only put black walls on there to send the image that this is artist space only, this is not open to advertising.
And is this in perpetuity or just for a month?
No, this is long term. They own the space on a contract, and of course the building's going to ask them to renew it whenever that happens.
But underneath is a thing that says Visual Cast.
Visual Cast.
And that looks like as if that's the name of the company that owns the advertising space.
That is the company that owns this side of the wall. That's it. And so artists, they put their money in together and they just put up these black...
But they won't be... It'll just be black.
It's only going to stay black. And it's been black for about 3 to 4 years.
And do they change the tone of the black?
Exactly the same.
Wow. So I can tell you, folks, that there are two shades of black on the wall, right? One is what I would call really black.
Like charcoal and is the other one, yeah.
But anyway, the photograph will reveal a certain amount. And I'm sure on the internet you will get proper,
There's wonderful stories about the artist as well.
Okay. But an individual artist, right?
This individual artist, this is his idea.
And he's a kind of a social entrepreneur is he?
Obviously. Yeah. And he's done lots of different... I don't know what we would call them, political pieces or sort of stance pieces, as maybe people would say.
When was this campaign to prevent it being owned by commercial?
I think I'd have to guess around 2008, 2009, somewhere around that time. As this neighborhood started to develop really relatively quickly, companies like Gap and companies like McDonald's and so forth realized that this was prime advertising space. And the local artists wanted nothing to do with that and wanted to keep the space open. That was their method of choice.
But tell me, look, I mean, in most places, artists would be, would lack the power and the coherence to actually, you know, and they're mainly buried in their art, right?
Sure.
So they would lack the ability to organize a consortium.
We're going to walk this way. I'm going to show you something.
To do
else.
That, right? So, yeah. What is different about Chicago artists, sure. or was it just a freak of nature or something?
No, I think this is really that's a great question because Chicago artists really do represent sort of the tipping point of where art and activism connect. And
my God, Chicago, that's a bit like the first paragraph in a new book on the topic.
It sounds like it, right?
Come on, give us a little bit of that.
And so, come on. I think Chicago artists really do take great pride in not isolating their art only for consumption only, but they want to utilize their art to create movements. In many ways, they use their art to advertise political movements.
Well, the guy I think of, by the way, in relation to what you've just shown me, is a guy called Cesar Manrique. Mm. Cesar Manrique is lived in Lanzarote, and he basically is responsible for a social movement which has prevented the island of Lanzarote having high-rise buildings. And in the Canaries, it's a particularly incredible achievement that Lanzarote has been preserved from high-rise development. And Cesar Manrique was with Miro and Picasso and others in New York in the 60s, and he left. He was a friend with them, and he went back to Lanzarote, where he came from. He's an artist of immense substance as a sculptor and as a painter and as a social activist and as a philosopher, all the way. So, and it's just that that was the kind of... I mean, he didn't do that, but...
It's the same concept. It's the same mentality. Yeah. But it's the most important thing is that you have to be surrounded or in an environment that can still take you seriously. Right? And so what I'm taking you to now is just a block away from where we saw. So what you'll see, this is a parking space. And one side of the wall is, this is called the Mega Mural Mall here in our neighborhood. And the Mega Mural Mall is funded, and the idea started with Gallery F, which is a local gallery here in Logan Square. And each section of the mural that goes down, I would probably say 100 yards or so.
So there's a big long wall that goes 100 yards, yes. And it's basically being painted in, that's a cubist section.
Yep.
There's a fish sitting on top of a sausage.
Yep. It's almost cartoon-like.
Two women in bikinis on a desert island, and a bubble coming out of her mouth saying top tuna, a sun, a wave, a tsunami coming over the top.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to have to photograph this, of course.
But the unique thing about this wall is that it's completely free art space. So the artist can go to Gallery F and say, I've got a really interesting public work that I'd like to paint or put on the mural for a week or two. And they say,
so this is not there permanently?
No. This will be different in probably 2 weeks. It'll be somebody else.
Right.
So I like to come here every 2 or 3 weeks and just walk and look and see what else is new.
And tell me, I mean, this whole thing, is there a name, by the way, for... this kind of stuff, you know? By that I mean...
In Chicago we would call this community art.
Right, that's what I mean. So it's called community art. Now this is the... On one level, this is what children do in communities, in schools.
Very, very common in Chicago.
But this is you know...
It's almost graffiti-like in many ways.
Well, it is, yeah, but it's arresting... It's edgy.
Sure.
It's...
But it goes on and on and on and on.
Wow, it does go on and on.
But there's another place in Rogers Park that something like this exists on the edge of the beach. And it's concrete, and it's a lower wall, and it goes on and on and on. When I was a kid, at 6 years old, my kindergarten project was... So every kid, when they graduate from kindergarten, they have to think of an activist project. And mine was... How about all of the class, we'd go and paint the art wall on the beach? And that was what my project was.
Oh, you got to do it.
I got to do it.
I always wondered which kids got to do it, because I never got to do it.
So I want to tell you a little bit about this one. Sleep is the cousin of death. This character, so you'll see... Are you still recording there?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
So you'll see that there's a bit of a cartoon... like character here.
Yes.
And this is actually...
Lying with football boots on and football socks and knobbly knees and long blue shorts and a white top and a hat which has got goggles or something on and a green head.
A halo, right?
Oh, it's a. Yep. It's also like a. It's like a thing you'd put on you to protect you from falling off a bicycle.
Sure.
Or something. And a halo.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is very, very high level... you know, political or social activism art. And this man is incredibly famous in Chicago, so much so...
Do you remember his name?
I would have to look it up.
Okay, it doesn't matter, but anyway,
he's very famous.
Yeah?
And so much so that he was a graffiti artist and was doing this art illegally. And he was creating pictures of this character in different positions, laying down, jumping
around the city?
Around the city, everywhere. And everyone's...
On the side of trains?
Side of trains, walls, light posts, parking spaces, and whatever. And people became very familiar with this character. And the idea of it was to draw attention to marginalized kids in very, very dangerous parts of the city. And so what this character represents is a child. And now he's been featured at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. He's also got new sculptures and statues in downtown. Same guy.
There is the local train.
This is where it's going underground now.
Oh, right.
Right here.
I have to get a photograph of this one, which for some weird reason appeals to me.
Although it
looks pretty tough to look at, but... Look, we better hurry back, you know. This is much too And there's a bit there waiting for waiting for use, maybe?
I think it has to stop here, because from here back, I think it's owned by this building.
But that,
which
that
is up for sale, too.
I mean, that is a fantastic use of something that would otherwise be totally boring.
Okay. Yeah. But just to make the point further, this is only one of thousands of wall murals in Chicago. And many of them get very ethnic depending on what neighborhood you're in. So we can go to a neighborhood called Pilsen, which is very Puerto Rican, and it would be ethnic art, and it's just beautiful. Yeah.
There was a time when that kind of behavior, right, of painting in public places freely like that, you know, almost like on a voluntary basis in a kind of way as a statement, mm-hmm. was edgy and arty. Tell me, do you think there's any possibility that that era has passed and it's just become wallpaper in the background, or does it still have, does the message have an ability to disrupt the status quo in any way?
I don't know. I think, especially with technology now no longer being something that the young generation does, it's something that they are. I think interpretation of art and the demonstration of art is very different. And it's not going to be so much analog in physical space, but it's going to be represented in digital, virtual space. And so I do think that there will be some sort of influence lost with this kind of art. But there's also something interesting about it too, because even though the influence may be lost, there will still be a very interesting sort of stigma tied to it, because it will be different than new art might be. So I still think there might be some kind of influence. But today,
did you just use the word stigma?
I did.
You did? You see, I think that's a great word. I haven't heard anybody... You know, stigma has usually got negative associations, right? But the role of stigma as a disruptor of the status quo, of, for example, you know, people who are stigmatized over time can actually cause the people who previously stigmatized them to rethink their whole position.
Oh, I think that's the core of when we look at examples of societies, the Arab Spring and so forth and so forth, that people will, they will push to redefine the stigma.
But
and it's not easy to do that, but you have to also be reminded of what the stigma is first.
But look, yeah. I know I'm bending the use of the word stigma, but to a certain, I mean, saying this, but if you take blind people, right, partially blind and partially sighted people, right, who in a sense suffered with a stigma, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, of course, nobody would call blind people stigmatized now,
sure,
right?
Sure, sure.
But there was a time when absolutely nothing was done on public buses
to
make it easier for them. Nowadays, you have buses with guide rails,
right.
You have buses with particular colors,
yeah.
You have steps that help people to get on. And actually, the unblind community have gained enormously from these improvements in design. You know, people like me find all of the improvements that have been made on a bus, I'm just sticking with the bus for a minute, to be a great help to me, even though I have sight.
Sure, right?
And that to me was the way my brain went while we were talking about that, in terms of something awfully simple as opposed to something as big as the Arab Spring or anything like that.
I don't know, they must have gone somewhere and maybe dropped
but
it off.
That's a great use of the word stigma, because all I have ever heard for as long as I can remember is that, you know, we must get rid of the stigma.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and in
mm-hmm.
a kind of a way, if we could use the stigma to undermine the status quo for the benefit of everybody,
we can then
say, you know, with pride, I'm a stigmatized person,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and, you know, I'm in that way, I'm upturning the assumptions.
I think what it's doing is drawing out the negativity that may have existed in the stigma, and either forcing people or incentivizing people to not only understand the negativity but to then become tolerant of it. Doesn't mean the stigma disappears, but they become more tolerant.
But if we translate it into mental health field, where, for example, people
mm-hmm.
with severe depression,
sure.
you know, feel that they're stigmatized, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you then translate it into using the stigma of depression and start talking about how people who have experienced, you know, periods of unwellness in their mental health actually have gained something in a positive way.
Sure.
You know, obviously provided they survive. Uh-huh. But that in that sense, you start talking about, you know, almost like reversing this. So look, I make this up, right? But saying to somebody, look, you've never actually, you know, felt that
depressed.
You're worthless.
Sure.
You've never felt, you know, your future has nothing in it for you.
Yeah.
Oh, you poor person. You actually don't understand what it's like to be fully human.
Right.
Because that is actually a very normal human sensation.
Yeah.
Out of which great art is made, great work is made, great
philosophy,
great humility is made, great groundedness in reality is made. Because actually to go through life thinking that life is a duddle and basically you can take your mental health for granted is too bloody risky. You know, so to be carrying on, obviously it's a great thing if you haven't had your mental health collapse.
Uh-huh.
But if you live life as if your mental health could never collapse, you're living in cloud cuckoo land.
Right. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
I've never really thought of saying to somebody that the stigma that exists is actually something can be used positively for change.
I think so. I mean, I speak from a very different perception in that I teach and I think and research on policy. And so policy is all about how can I create incentives without them knowing they are incentives.
Right.
And so what you have to do is you have to utilize current assets. And stigmas are assets. Right? They already exist. I didn't have to create them.
Right.
So I can't remove them entirely, so I just have to help people redefine them. And if it creates an incentive in the new definition, then I use less resources.
Wow. Well,
it's a different way of thinking, right?
Yeah,
Again, this is, I think, in the nonprofit context, it's a brilliant strategy because a lot of the times nonprofits are serving people who deal with stigmas that the majority of the people are not dealing with.
You know? But you know, makers,
sick and those sorts of things.
Loads of people have realized that use what is around you to make stuff which is new.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is such a simple thing. Yeah. Okay, we're going upstairs, we're going to stop talking, and we're going to have food.
Lovely. Well, that was fun.
Well, just make sure that this is no longer recording. And we've done 17 minutes in that little fragment. Anyway, that's it. More about Chicago. Well, you should know a lot about Chicago by now. Certainly I feel I have. Bye for now.